Last week, we talked whole life versus IUL, guarantees versus growth potential. Check that out if you didn't get a chance to hear that yet. This week, we're talking IUL specifically. We're going to dig into the taxes, the loans, and the flexibility of this product. Next week, we're going to do whole life. So be sure and hit that subscribe button. If you haven't subscribed yet, welcome to the Life Insurance Financial Education Podcast, where we're pulling back the curtain on high cash value life insurance and how it can help you build wealth and achieve your financial goals. I'm your host, James Barber, your Oregon Cash Flow Pro.
Hi, my name's Jane with Tech Examiner Club.
And we're talking IULs. Both Jing and I own IULs. We like IULs. And let's dive into one of the biggest benefits of the IUL: taxes. What are the tax advantages of this product and why do people like it?
When it comes to the tax for life insurance policies, we're talking about put after tax money into the life insurance as the premium. The money will grow tax deferred when we pull the money out as a loan, because it is a loan, it's a loan against the policy, we don't pay any personal income tax. But when we talk about life insurance proceeds, the death benefit, it will subject to the estate tax.
Yeah, in most cases, it will be subject to the estate tax unless you do some proper planning. And you talked about we access the loans in order to get the tax advantages of accessing that cash value without having to pay taxes. But if we didn't do a loan, if we did an actual withdrawal, how does that money get treated?
So there's a terminology called FIFO and LIFO, first in, first out, or last in, first out. In life insurance concept, it's FIFO, first in, first out. If you put in $50,000, that's your base. When you withdraw, if your policy grows, say, to $70,000, you want to withdraw the total $70,000, the $50,000 is your base. You pay zero tax because that's your money. That's after-tax money you put into the policy. That 20% actually will become your personal income tax. That $20,000 will become your income, and you have to pay personal income tax in that year when you withdraw that money.
That's right. It's called your basis. Everything you put into a policy becomes the first in. That's the premiums you put in. And it's the first thing that they're assuming that you're taking out, as long as your policy does not become a modified endowment contract. And we're going to get into that here in just a little bit. But as far as the tax advantages go, you nailed it. We put our money into this policy, and we want to access it tax-free, and we get the ability to do that as long as it's classified as life insurance. Now, the death benefit does have estate tax implications unless we plan accordingly. So there are ways to get money into a policy and then have that pay out that tax-free death benefit without affecting the taxes. How do we do that?
Well, there's something called ILIT, Irrevocable Life Insurance Trust. Basically, trust itself is an entity already. What we are doing here using the ILIT is segregate what you own versus what this trust owns. Because it's a trust, it will not count into your own personal estate. In that case, you do whatever the proceed, it will not count into your proceed. So there's no estate tax involved in this situation.
Yes. And when you say proceed, you do mean death benefit. I know you're used to saying the proceeds, and I'm used to talking about death benefit. So just to be clear, that's what that means. When the death benefit is, or when the life insurance policy gets put into an irrevocable trust, it's no longer part of your estate, and that's one way that you can avoid the taxes. Now, for a lot of our clients, they're going to be using these policies for infinite banking or drawing loans against the policy in order to use that cash value. And there can be implications if you move that policy into an irrevocable trust that might make it harder to access those cash values. So that's something to be aware of. the estate planning part of this, you've got to figure that separately from what you're going to be doing in the meantime, where you're trying to access that cash value for investments while you're still alive and well before we do the preparations for estate taxes.
Definitely, especially we're always talking about a holistic approach. The estate tax, you think there's a big chunk of the tax exemption, but if you add everything together, all your banking, saving, your brokerage account, your IRAs, everything, your equity of it can add up very quickly.
Yeah, good points. We talked a bit about the advantages of being able to grow this tax deferred, access that cash value tax free, and potentially have that tax free death benefit that may not be attached to the estate. Let's talk just a little bit about modified endowment contracts. If you accidentally or on purpose, sometimes it happens on purpose, put too much money into a life insurance policy, the IRS is going to classify it as a modified endowment contract instead. And how does that change the tax implications?
So if you get into this MEC, the MAC policy, what we just mentioned, all the tax benefit will go away. It will be treated exactly as a retirement account. All the tax will, it still grow tax, all your cash value will still grow tax deferred, but if you access to your money before 59 and a half, 10% penalty will apply. Also, because you, the LIFO we were mentioning, the tax benefit of your base will go away as well.
So almost, you still can get the base out tax-free, but it's a last in, first out. So the base doesn't come out first tax-free, it comes out last tax-free because it was already after tax dollars.
That's why we try not to do the MAC policy. Depends on your purpose. Like what James mentioned, sometimes you want to just make it MAC because your purpose is not to access to the cash value. You don't want to do the LIFO. The main purpose for a MAC policy is purely for the death benefit, which it will go with your estate tax planning. Sometimes you want that leverage. You put the money in, and then you want to get the death benefit. Even it's a MAC policy, you understand it's a MAC policy, you do not plan to access your cash value.
Now, there's one other important feature of a MEC that makes it very unattractive for people who generally do what we're doing with these policies. And that's the loans also are treated like withdrawals. You're still going to pay that penalty and you're still going to pay taxes. You're going to pay the income taxes, even if you just take a loan against it. So there's really not a good reason to access those cash values once it becomes a MEC. Now, it can only become a MEC if you put too much money into the policy in relation to the death benefit. If you have a policy that becomes a MEC, you can correct it by just taking out some money as long as you do it within a certain time period, and that's usually 65 days. If you correct the MEC within 65 days, you can make sure you have life insurance again and not a modified endowment contract. However, if you don't correct it will forever be a modified endowment contract, even if you 1035 exchange it into a new life insurance product. That MEC status will not go away. So be very careful out there.
That's very important to work with your life insurance agent to make sure if you want to access to those cash value, don't make it MAC.
Yeah, I would just say if you're throwing extra cash into a policy, you're max funding these policies. It's a good thing to check with your agent once in a while and make sure that it didn't create a MEC. Most of the time, the carrier is going to either reject your payment or send you a refund back if it creates a MEC. At the very least, they will send you a letter telling you it became a modified endowment contract. But that letter is not going to have bells going off that are going to alert you that this is a very important letter. And so it could be very easy to miss if it accidentally becomes a modified endowment contract. I think that covers the topic of taxes and loans. Let's finish this up by discussing the flexibility of the IUL. And This is one of the reasons that these things are so popular in the life insurance space right now. The flexibility of what you can contribute, what you have to contribute. Tell me a little bit about your experience with the flexibility in these products.
Definitely. For the IUL policy I have, I really like the feature of the flexibility. So I'm not tied up with a fixed annual premium. If my cash flow is good from my real estate portfolio, I will put probably as much as I can. But just say in this year I have massive capital expenses for my portfolio. Maybe when it's time for me to make that annual premium, I may not have that big chunk of money sitting around for me to make that contribution. Of course, I should plan it well to make sure I have that money. But the flexibility really is one of the biggest attraction to me to have this IUL policy, because we all know sometimes things happen. Just say I really have to make this capital expenses. Right now, this year, I can only contribute a very small amount, but I could catch up later down the road in this year somewhere, so I can still have as much contribution I want to make. So this, I think the flexibility gave us, the real estate investors, that peace of mind, saying I don't have to have, say, 100K or 50K on that day to make that premium contribution.
I love hearing the personal story on that with your policy because it really hits home when you can think about what might be a situation where you might not have the ability to make a big premium payment within the due date or within a grace period. And I know I have some big whole life policies. And on your anniversary date, you've got to come up with your payment. You have to come up with at least the base. There's a lot of flexibility in whole life, which we'll talk about next week. But you always have to make the base whole life payment. And sometimes that just might not be possible. Or I've even had a client that was in the middle of moving and just forgot. And their policy ended up lapsing. We were able to get it corrected, thankfully, because they had just prior dumped a whole bunch of money into a policy. But that lack of flexibility where you can't miss a base premium payment. We don't have that in the IUL. And so the flexibility in the IUL is really great. And the ability to be able to catch up, to fill up that space that you might not have filled up this year or the year before or 10 years before, that space doesn't go away like it may in some other products. There's a lot of whole life products that have limitations on how much you can contribute. To catch up, it can get very complicated. But it's pretty simple in an IUL. The mech space just carries over and you can fill it up whenever you want in almost every situation. When we talk about flexibility of IULs, I'm gonna go back to the very first year of an IUL. This is gonna be the least flexible. The reason the first year is the least flexible is because there's a minimum that you have to put into a policy. So that they know you at least have that first year's expenses covered. We have a minimum and then we have a maximum. That maximum is called the MEC limit. If you go over that, it becomes the modified endowment contract, which we want to avoid. So you have the flexibility to put in the minimum up to the maximum inside of these products. In one of my policies, I have a minimum of like $2,000 and a maximum of somewhere around 80,000. That is a huge amount of space, even for that first year, that I can really dial in what my budget allows for that first year. Now, after the first year, the insurance company, they're just reaching into the cash bucket and pulling out the expenses every single month. They don't care if you're putting new money into the policy. The only thing they care about is there's enough cash in that cash bucket that they can pull out the expenses, the cost of the insurance. If there's not enough cash in there, your policy lapses or it enters a grace period. But if there is enough cash, it doesn't matter if it was put in as premium or if it was growth happening in the policy. So there's a lot of flexibility after that first year. And even in the first year, the minimums are very low with a well-designed policy. Now, if it's not well-designed, that minimum is going to be really high. So if you see a high minimum with an agent that you're working with, run the other direction. Come contact Jing or myself or Carlo here at the Life Insurance Financial Education Podcast, and we would be happy to show you a design that has a very low minimum, which inherently means low expense.
One thing I want to quickly mention is, although we have the flexibility, we still need to pay attention to our purpose, right? We want to put as much cash or as much premium as possible to grow the policy. We want that infinite banking concept. So don't always target to fund the bare minimum. Then there's no purpose to have this infinite banking policy. I think it's very important to have your best capacity to maximum fund it up to the max limit as what we are talking about.
Very important that when you buy these policies that you're going to max fund it. So good point. Even though there is a lot of flexibility to just minimum fund it, nobody's going to be happy with a minimum funded policy. It's like always going to be on the verge of lapse because that minimum is so low. So good points. I think that wraps it up for this topic. Do you have a call to action for our listeners this week, Jing?
It's time for this week's call to action.
Definitely. I think you mentioned several points about different flexibility and different contribution limit. It's a wide range about I have a policy right around what you mentioned. I think my minimum is 25, 2300. The maximum probably 85,000. So I think for because we all work with agents, but it's our policy. When we actually try to fund it, we want to take a look how much you're comfortable to put in, what's your plan. If say for now I can only contribute 5,000, maybe in 6 months I can contribute another 50,000. So have a well defined plan of your policy for this year is super important. I want to encourage everyone to take a look at your policy, have a plan of your premium funding. What's your plan to actually have a well designed and well funded IBC policy each year?
And I'll say if you're at all interested in the IUL, if this sounds intriguing to you, this type of a product and the flexibility that it provides and the tax advantages that it provides, reach out to one of us or really any other agent, but it's always good to get a second opinion. Reach out to an agent. Just talk a little bit about what your goals are, what you're trying to do, and maybe this product might help you meet those goals. I know that there's a lot of situations that this product can be really great due to all the benefits that come along with it and that flexibility. So with that, we will bring you next week a similar topic, a similar breakdown of the taxes, loans, and flexibility in whole life insurance. For this week, I'm your host, James Barber, your Oregon Cash Flow Pro, and I'm licensed for life insurance and annuities across the country. Look forward to talking with you guys if you get the opportunity to reach out to us.
And this is Jing, your host of Tech Exempt Millionaire Club. We help people start accumulating tax-exempt wealth by utilizing IBCs and utilizing self-directed Roth accounts. There's so many Roth accounts you could set up. And then we're also helping people with the credit building so you can use other people's money. Happy to talk to anyone if you have any life insurance agent need as well as start accumulating tax-exempt wealth.
Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.
Take care.